Welcome to another episode of the PDB Situation Report. I'm Mike Baker, your eyes and ears on the world stage. Let's get briefed. We'll start things off with this week's NATO summit, marking the 75th anniversary of the military alliance. Now, the stakes were high as the alliance is grappling with some intense challenges, including, of course, the ongoing war in Ukraine and the rapid ascent of China. Joining us to talk about the summit is retired Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery. He'll share his expert analysis on these critical issues. Next, we'll look at some startling revelations from space, from outer space. New images showing the expansion of Chinese spy bases in Cuba. Look, what's old is new again. This includes a previously undisclosed site just 70 miles from the U.S. naval base at Guantanamo Bay. Retired Army Colonel John Mills will join us to discuss the implications of these findings on national security. Now, however, before we get to our guests, just a word about what's happening in the current world of U.S. presidential politics. You know that we don't typically talk about politics here on the PDB. It's best to leave all of that to pundits and political pontificators. But the situation with President Biden, well, it's a national security issue for the U.S., and that's where the PDB comes in. That is in our wheelhouse. First, we're all aging, right? A statement of the obvious, I know. But we're all aging, and we're all aging in different ways. And most of America, at one point or another, has to deal with elderly parents or grandparents. All of us know very well what aging and what declining mental and physical abilities look like. And we know that it doesn't get better with time. Nobody is Benjamin Button. The decline continues because that's how aging works, particularly when health factors influence mental acuity. Now, Biden's family and his close circle of advisors, including Kamala Harris, White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain, Karine Jean-Pierre, John Kirby, his key campaign advisors like Anita Dunn and Jared Bernstein, and key members of the cabinet and Democrat leadership like Gavin Newsom, Pete Buttigieg, and others, they have spent many months, actually longer than that, trying to hide Biden's situation, covering up. Let me put it another way. They've been lying to the American public. Every time they've come out and talked about how sharp he is, oh, he's sharp as a tack, how vigorous and engaged and energetic, he'd put younger folks to shame. Well, they've been lying to you. And they know it. Now, none of them ask themselves, while engaging in this cover-up, what is best for American national security. They simply asked, how do we cover this up? How do we stay in power? Biden is reportedly functioning best between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Being commander-in-chief, you may know this, is not a part-time job. And the public, well, none of us elected the insular cabal of sycophants surrounding him, who now apparently have been running things at the White House for quite some time. Much of the media went along with this effort, and they're only now talking about it because it can't be hidden anymore. And they, like others complicit in the effort, are now trying to cover their own ass and act as if they simply had no idea. Who knew? It's a national security issue, and it's not just for the upcoming election, but for the months leading up to November. The American public, you deserve more transparency, and you should be demanding it. All right, let's move on. We're kicking off today by taking a look at the NATO summit, which just wrapped up on Thursday. Now, this summit was a significant milestone, marking the alliance's 75th anniversary. And by the way, President Biden was 6 years old when NATO was born. But it wasn't just about celebrations. The 32-member NATO alliance grappled with intense challenges, like the ongoing war in Ukraine, of course, and the rapid ascent of China. Now, during the summit, NATO declared that Ukraine is on an irreversible path to membership once its conflict with Russia ends. In a show of solidarity, the alliance announced a series of measures to boost the nation's defenses. Now, the final communique of the summit, a document approved by all 32 NATO members, also took aim at China. It called China a decisive enabler of Russia's war in Ukraine and expressed serious concerns about Beijing's expanding nuclear arsenal. Of course, all eyes were on President Biden throughout the event. Amid ongoing questions about his age and mental acuity, He sought to reassure both allies and critics. Biden announced a new $225 million aid package for Ukraine, which includes an additional Patriot missile system aimed at bolstering Ukraine's air defenses against Russian airstrikes. Now, to help us unpack what happened during this week's summit, we're joined by retired Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery, a senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Admiral Montgomery, thank you very much for taking the time to join us here on the Situation Report today.
Hey, well, thank you very much for having me. Excited to be here.
Excellent. Let's start at the 30,000 foot level with this summit. From your perspective, the most important development to come out of this, the most important announcement to come out of this summit, what would it be?
So I think it would have to, although first I just want to state, I do think that this is the 75 years of this alliance is truly remarkable. And I don't think of it as 75 years old, it's almost 75 years young because it's revitalized itself since Putin's invasion of Ukraine, which would get me to the number one takeaway, which is that matching the kind of $60 billion aid package that the United States passed in April, NATO has agreed to continue its annual payment of about $43 billion of security assistance to Ukraine. To give you an idea where we sit on that, over the last 2 years, the United States has given about $52.3 billion worth of security assistance. And the non-U.S. Europeans, you know, anyone but us, has given about $50 billion. So they've been pretty close, $53 to $50 billion. And now we've got a chunk of money, you know, coming forward for the Ukrainians. And they've got a reasonably equal size, because ours will spread out over more than a year, chunk of money. And what that means is Ukraine will have the access to munitions and equipment that it should need to fend off these Russian advances.
Okay, yeah, so you're talking continuity of resources. There's been some talk that part of the reason behind the summit's focus on securing more of what could be considered a long-term level of support is this idea of Trump-proofing the future because of possible political shifting winds. We don't get very political here at the PDB for the most part, but from your perspective, would you sense that, let's say, the former president wins in November, do you sense that there would be a shift in significantly in the level of support that the U.S. provides to Ukraine?
Well, certainly, I hope not. And I hope not because I hope President Trump sees, you know, if he's reelected, would see that the NATO he's inheriting in January 2025 is much different than the one he left in January 2021. And he deserves part of the credit for that. His insistence that they spend more money. We've gone from six countries being at 2% of GDP on defense. You know, that was the target set they're looking for. We've gone from six countries when he started complaining about it very vocally to 23 countries today. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, he yelled and screamed about it. Number two, Vladimir Putin invaded Russia. That's why they're there. So he deserves part of that credit. So I hope he sees that. There are a lot of side hustles going on here. There's a $700 million purchase of Stinger missiles from the United, basically from Raytheon, that was announced here by eight different countries. There's a transfer of five Patriot missile systems from Germany, the Dutch, the United States, Romania. Well, those countries will rebuy Patriots now from Raytheon, from a U.S. company. You know, when we say $52 billion has been given in military security assistance to Ukraine, the vast majority of that, you know, in the high 40 billion, has gone to Arkansas, California, Texas, Florida, Georgia, you know, California, where we build these weapon systems. The money never left the United States. The equipment leaves the United States on the way there. By the way, when the Europeans spend their $50 billion, much of that was buying equipment in the United States because they don't have the defense industrial base to build it themselves anymore. They were buying Javelin missiles, Stinger missiles, Patriot missiles, AMRAAMs, which are a missile used for air defense. You know, it's called an effector. All that stuff was being bought in the United States, and all that 155 millimeter ammunition, and shipped to European countries who then gave it to Ukraine. So I hope the president sees this for the, for the kind of victory it is for the United States defense industrial base, for his insistence that Europe do more to defend itself, and for the United States doing the right thing and standing up to an authoritarian bully. And let's be clear, Putin's nothing less than a stone cold killer. And if we need a proof of that, what he did to his number one opposition, Alexander Navalny, you know, putting a man who just had a stroke in a, Siberian, concentration mm-hmm. camp until he died. And then, by the way, 2 days ago, charging his wife with treason for complaining about it. I think Trump should be happy with where we sit now in Europe, and he should sit back and think part of that's due to him.
Yeah, that is very interesting, actually. Now, yeah, we could talk about Navalny and the information surrounding that situation all day long, but let's stay focused on the summit for the most part. There was some comments coming out of the White House prior to the summit. John Kirby, in particular, was questioned about the NATO leaders' potential focus on President Biden and the current, political situation swirling around Washington, D.C. regarding Biden's situation. And John Kirby's point was, look, we don't have to reassure the NATO leaders of anything regarding President Biden. He essentially dismissed the idea that somehow NATO would be paying attention to this. I don't know whether you've got any scuttlebutt, scuttlebutt, of course, being a Navy term. I don't know if you've got any insight into to what degree during the summit NATO leaders were talking about internal U.S. politics.
Well, I suspect they were talking about internal U.S. politics, and certainly with their own staffs. My observation of the president publicly at these is he handled himself pretty normally. I think that part probably went all right. He announced all the things properly, and he announced quite a bit during his different speeches. Each leader is given a few things for which they're the bellwether, and he got his out there. I don't think there were any real issues with that. So I don't think they left here with a changed opinion, an either improved or degraded opinion of the president. That's probably something, and they'd probably be pretty careful. If you caught one of them saying it, would only be on a hot mic. They would not intentionally make comments about him. For lack of a competitor, we're the biggest dog in the NATO fight. And so no one's going to pick on our president. I do think the interesting person to talk to is Macron, who called NATO brain dead in 2021. And, what he thinks now, NATO increased its defense spending 18% this year. This is not a brain dead organization. This is an organization with focus. The United States deserves some of the praise for that. And of course, Putin deserves some of the credit for it. But, I'm really excited about where the NATO countries are going. It is amazing the degree to which we can organize ourselves to buy different things, buy different capabilities, have different responsibilities, among a series of democracies, some better democracies than other, but working together on this, and then call them out. Canada has been called out shamelessly all week long for its low defense spending, to the point where Trudeau had to announce today that he will meet the 2% mark by 2032, forced by the other democracies into saying things. So I think Biden handled himself well. I think the United States orchestrated this, very well. I love the last day being focused on Asia, on Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and Korea as key allies, and partners to NATO, trying to deal with China, who's an absolutely bad actor in the context of Russia and Ukraine, providing financial support and now actual military support to the Russians. So I really think President Biden and particularly NATO's General Secretary Stoltenberg and the NATO member states writ large have handled this really well.
Mm-hmm. How do you look at China? Obviously the focus has been for the past couple of years, intensely on Ukraine and Russia as a conflict. But do you view that more as, okay, we're dealing with it, it's tragic, and it's down to Putin's adventurism, but it's more of a contained issue, and China kind of sits out here above that as more of the long-term global threat or not? How do you perceive China?
Yeah, I don't think we're given that luxury. I think you described what we wish, the aspiration we had, that we could kind of disaggregate these threats. Two things have happened over the last, half decade. One, these four axis of authoritarianism, these four countries, China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, have become much closer. I recognize it's mostly transactional deals, but, Iran has given Russia several thousand Shahed drones and some ballistic missile parts. Mm-hmm. North Korea has given Russia 2.7 million artillery rounds at least and actual ballistic missiles, and is thinking about putting North Korean combat engineers, you know, in eastern Ukraine. And then finally, China, as I said, backstopped the Russian economy, 26% increase in trade, that, you know, to make up for loss of European gas and oil imports. And they've provided parts that go into weapons manufacturing and now actual, we think, kinetic parts, kinetic weapons. So all three of these countries have backstopped Russia in this fight. So that's a very serious thing. The second part of the China angle in this is that the way we look, our goal is to deter China. You know, we mentioned before we came on the air, I've got a son just got commissioned. He's headed to a ship in Japan. I'd really like to make sure we deter, not defeat China. Defeat implies we have to go to war and lose thousands of American sailors. So let's deter them. Well, the way you deter them is you have a capability to deter them. That means we spend our $850 billion defense budget wisely, get the right munitions, the right weapon systems, we posture them properly. But then after you have the capability, there's got to be a credible belief by China that you'll use it. And where we're sitting after Afghanistan, with our horrific withdrawal from there and our apparent like desire to just not be involved at the very, you know, at any cost to the Afghans, you know, our credibility was down. By stepping up in the case of Ukraine, Biden restored a little bit of that. But were we to back off now, were we to get out, stop supporting Ukraine, force Ukraine into a bad peace deal, or just, you know, or just ignore the European problem, the signal to China would be, hey, America isn't even willing to expend its treasure, much less its blood and treasure, to stick up for its allies and partners and principles. And if we were to back out of Ukraine, if we were to back out of our European commitments, that would be the equivalent of a green light to China to explore what they can in the South China Sea, in Taiwan, even in the East China Sea with Japan. And that is a bad signal for American forces in the Pacific.
Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery, if you wouldn't mind, if you just stay right there, we'll be back with more on the NATO summit just after a quick break. If you've been paying attention to the financial news, and I hope you have, experts are beginning to express concern that the U.S. dollar may lose its status as the world standard. Look, the warning signs are there. Saudi Arabia ending the petrodollar. Russia replacing U.S. dollars with the Chinese currency. BRICS attracting countries moving away from the U.S. dollar. The global de-dollarization trend, as we call it, is accelerating. And in times of uncertainty, right, gold is security. Call the proud Americans of the Patriot Gold Group today. Before it's too late, mention PDB, and you'll always get best-in-class service from Patriots Protecting Patriots. Patriot Gold Group has the No Fee for Life IRA, where your IRA or your 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you may be eligible for the No Fee for Life IRA on qualifying rollovers. Call 1-888-870-5457 for a free investor guide. Patriot Gold Group is Consumer Affairs' top-rated gold IRA dealer for 7 years in a row, and that's a lot of years in a row. Do yourself a favor, call 1-888-870-5457.
You slept through your alarm, missed the train, and your breakfast sandwich,
ugh,
cold. Sounds like you could use some luck.
I'm Victoria Cash, and Lucky Land is where people go every day to get lucky. At Lucky Land, you can play over 100 casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Go to LuckyLandSlots.com and get lucky today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to the PDB Situation Report. We're joined again by retired Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery. He's a senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. I wanted to ask you, Mark, if I could, about all this talk. There seems to be a driving desire by NATO at this point to ensure that they're somehow enshrining in their doctrine the notion that Ukraine will become part of NATO. And I wanted to get your take on that, both in the sense of, you know, what does that mean from, let's look across the other side of the aisle and you know, how would Putin, or how is Putin, you know, taking that news? And also a sense of a timeline, if you can talk to us about that.
You know, it's great that you bring that up. And in the context of, I do think this was a wonderful, a well-organized, well-executed summit. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg deserves all the credit for his last 10 years of leadership. Ukraine did not get what it wanted, if you'd asked them 6 months ago or 3 months ago. They did not get that at this summit. They wanted a clear path to membership. They wanted a clear statement of membership. What they got was, it's a well-lit bridge. I mean, you know, I guess that's better than a poorly lit bridge, but, you know, it's still a bridge. And that means you still have to ford a river. You know, I mean, this is not, they are not there yet. And this is in the, you know, when you read the exact language, it's when everyone feels we're ready and the conditions have been met. You know, that's, it's some time away. So that was, felt, made them feel uncomfortable. The second thing they wanted was that, that money I mentioned, the 40 billion the Europeans pledged, that's 40 billion euros, like $43 billion every year. You know, they wanted it for like a pledge for the next three, you know, 2, 3, or 5 years. And what they got was, it'll be an annual pledge, which means you have to come back each year and get it. So that they got a good, but they got a not good with it. Just like with the bridge, they got a good with a not good with it. You know, the and then finally, you know, President Zelensky was here asking President Biden very specifically for release of weapons, the ability to use the ATACMS for strikes deeper into Russia, not just around the Kharkiv battlefield. And I don't think he got that. So there were some, you know, with the positives and the overall, you know, for a coalition of the willing, you know, 32 close to democracies, you know, a lot was done. I still think Ukraine probably came away kind of with a glass half full, glass half empty kind of feeling.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. I think they were anticipating or hoping for more. I think probably, I suspect NATO leaders, the White House as well, probably set the table well enough going into the summit that they, it's not like they were disappointed. They understood what was coming down the pike. But if you look at all the folks that, and there's not an insignificant number of them out there who would say, in terms of Ukraine joining NATO, that's what drove Putin to engage in this invasion to begin with, right? This notion that the fear of NATO creeping up on his doorstep. I don't, full disclosure, I don't buy that. But I'm curious about what you would say to that argument.
So that's great. You know, this gets into, it's a great kind of topic to kind of come around to on this, that the idea of the provocation principle. You know, don't let the ATACMS fly too far. Don't let Ukraine into NATO because you'll provoke Putin to further things. You know, all of us who had to deal with a bully on the schoolyard, who've had to deal with that kind of person in the workplace, you know that you can't continually bend the knee or give way to the bully's demands because they won't end. So I kind of think at some point you got to say to Putin, you know, this will not stand. You know, just as President Bush said to Saddam Hussein about Kuwait, you know, we had to say, this will not stand. We are going to push you back from this. And I kind of wish we wouldn't make this, you know, angst-ridden decision in every weapon system like we did with Gimlers, then Abrams tanks, then F-16s, then ATACMS. You know, every weapon system, we go this, you know, this ring in our hands, like, are we gonna alienate Putin more, you know? At some point, you have to say, well, that's the risk we take when we entered into this crisis with him and we decided to, you know, to provide our treasure to the Ukrainians to try to win this war. So I don't accept this provocation principle that you should allow authoritarians to get their way for fear they might do worse, because they will do worse. They'll do worse whether you give way or not. So, you know, don't give way, stand up, hold them accountable, and signal to all the other bullies, whether it's in Iran or North Korea or China, that the United States stands up for its principles and its national security interests and pushes back on bullies.
Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery, really thank you very much for joining us and sharing your insight.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. And again, it was a good summit to watch, and I think a lot got accomplished. Thanks for covering it.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. All right. Well, coming up next, newly published satellite images show a troubling expansion of Chinese electronic eavesdropping stations in Cuba. Remember the Cuban Missile Crisis? Well, and the closest base is just 70 miles from Guantanamo Bay. You might remember Gitmo. Retired Colonel John Mills, former director of cybersecurity, policy, strategy, and international affairs at the Department of Defense, will join us to help unpack the implications of these developments. Stay right there. If you're a listener to the PDB, and of course you should be, you know there's a lot going on in the world today. Authoritarian regimes on the march, wars overseas, political turmoil across the globe. How cheery am I? This is why now more than ever, you should support those on the right side of history. Blackout Coffee is committed to your values, supporting constitutional rights, and certainly those on the front lines, the troops, local law enforcement. Look, Blackout Coffee honors all hardworking Americans. I'm proud to recommend Blackout Coffee. This is an American coffee company 100% committed to the American traditional values. From sourcing the beans to the roasting process, customer support, and shipping, they've got an incredible work ethic, and they're dedicated to promoting your principles, and they accept no compromise, I mean no compromise, on taste or quality. Check out blackoutcoffee.com/PDB and use coupon code PDB for 20% off your first order. Look, ditch those other guys. I mean, seriously, ditch them, lose them, right? Blackout Coffee remains true to our values. That's blackoutcoffee.com/PDB. Use coupon code PDB for 20% off your first order. As we like to say around here, be awake, not woke.
Hey, it's Kimberly Fletcher here from Moms for America with some very exciting news. Tucker Carlson is going on a nationwide tour this fall, and Moms for America has the exclusive VIP meet and greet experience for you. Before each show, you can have the opportunity to meet Tucker Carlson in person. These tickets are fully tax-deductible donations. So go to momsforamerica.us and get one of our very limited VIP meet and greet experiences with Tucker at any of the 15 cities on his first ever coast-to-coast tour. Not only will you be supporting Moms for America in our mission to empower moms, promote liberty, and raise patriots, your tax-deductible donation secures you a full VIP experience with priority entrance and check-in, premium gold seating in the first five rows, access to a pre-show cocktail reception, an individual meet-and-greet and photo with America's most famous conservative and our friend, Tucker Carlson. Visit momsforamerica.us today for more information and to secure your exclusive VIP meet-and-greet tickets. See you on the tour.
Welcome back to the PDB Situation Report. I want to turn now to the Caribbean, where newly published satellite images are revealing the expansion of electronic eavesdropping stations in Cuba, which are believed to be linked to China. I know, that's shocking. These stations include new construction just 70 miles from the U.S. Naval Base at Guantanamo Bay. You remember Gitmo. Last year, reports emerged about China and Cuba negotiating closer defense and intelligence ties, including setting up a joint military training facility and running eavesdropping operations. Oh, good. I don't see how that can go wrong for U.S. national security. It turns out they might already be in business, but the exact locations, well, they were kept under wraps. The recent findings by the Center for Strategic and International Studies shed light on these hidden sites. Experts are worried that China is, they're worried about this, that China is using Cuba's proximity to the southeastern U.S. to tap into sensitive communications from American military bases, space launch facilities, and shipping routes. They're expressing concern. They're worried about it might be happening, as if it's somehow not happening. On top of that, Chinese facilities on the island might help them spy on U.S. citizens through telecommunications networks. To break down what all this means, we've got retired Colonel John Mills with us. He's the former director of cybersecurity policy, strategy, and international affairs. Try putting that on a business card at the Department of Defense. And now John is a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. He's also author of a great book, War Against the Deep State. Colonel Mills, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, Mike. Thank you. It's just an honor to be on your show.
Well, you'll think differently. So, hey, listen, I really do mean it, though. You're a perfect guest to have on to talk about this. Are we looking at the Cuban Missile Crisis 2.0 here?
Well, now that you've brought that expression up, I've been poo-pooed for this. But by Chinese doctrine, if they're going to put this much investment in an overseas facility, such as Djibouti, such as Cambodia, they put long-range air defense missile. Now, the original agreement, I'm not sure if it was in writing or has been digitized from the Cuban Missile Crisis, was no offensive missiles to be reintroduced into Cuba. Well, The modern air defense missiles, the S-300 and S-400, guess what? Are dual purpose. They can hit air targets, but they can also hit ground targets, and they have a long range. They can knock down airliners over Orlando. So I would say, in addition to the unbelievable footprint that is now in Cuba by China, we have a second Cuban Missile Crisis in progress. So, and can't count on the DNI that this is above the intelligence collection priority stack. Everybody go to the DNI website and look up the Intel Community Directive on the priority stack. Not revealing any classified information, I have low confidence, using an Intel community term, that this is above the cut line and that we're actually apportioning any collection resources to figure out what in the world is going on in Cuba.
Now, this is going to sound perhaps a little odd, but have the Chinese essentially pushed the Russians out? Look, the Russians obviously, you know, they helped build the Cuban society under Castro. They helped build the Cuban intelligence service and maintain it. And so when you think about Cuba and you think about a nation hostile to U.S. interests, it's always Russia when we talk about Cuba. But have the Chinese somehow pushed the Russians out?
Well, I think the correct way to look at Russia, Iran, and North Korea, they are now colonies of China. China is exploiting. Russia is cash strapped. NATO just made this shocking statement that Russia would not be in the war in Ukraine if it wasn't for Chinese support. I think China has essentially taken advantage of the cash poor situation of Russia and has moved in and taken over. Now, when the first base, the old Lourdes facility southwest of Havana, was announced last year with the I think it was New York Times report. An undisclosed source, that's always Jake Sullivan, said, oh, yeah, it happened during the Trump administration. I've actually been right outside the room when John Brennan talked on background of media. So I know this game of talking on background. It's pathetic. So last summer, the first facility, the old Lourdes facility, and Jake Sullivan said it happened during the Trump years. Oh, yeah, we knew about it. It happened during the Trump years. Well, with a modicum of research, I came up with a Miami Herald article from the 90s saying Chinese spy base in Cuba. So who's telling the truth here? So I would say they have been there for a long time already, but now it's not one spy base. Now they got the elephant cage down near Guantanamo, the old HF collection facility, and they got four other facilities. So we have a very robust Chinese footprint. We're failing to enforce the Monroe Doctrine, and they're sitting there over in the Bahamas. They're sitting astride the undersea cables going right down to downtown Miami at the Terramark facility. I mean, what in the world? What worse things could possibly happen?
Yeah, and you'd have to assume, not to dwell on the bromance between the Russian intel service and the Cuban intel service, but you would have to assume that after all those decades, the Russians have a significant number of assets still reporting to them from within Cuban intelligence. And so, this enhanced cooperation with the Chinese, you'd assume that a great deal of the intel that the Chinese are receiving is somehow also being fed to the Russians. So it is as if, we're not just facing one or the other, as I was talking about at the beginning, how they pushed the Russians out. I like the way you put it, and just sort of saying, look, you've got the top tier player, which is the Chinese Communist Party, and then you've got this group of, I don't want to call them minions. I wouldn't want to be disparaging to Putin and North Korea and Iran, but I, again, you would have to assume that there's a even if it's not formal intel sharing between the Chinese and the Russians, that somehow the Russians are collecting intel, that they're benefiting from at the expense of the Chinese and their resources and investment.
Well, they're definitely getting scraps and things that fall off the table. But the main game is clearly China at this point in time and the MSS. And the Russians, the Soviets, the Chinese, they copy what we do and how we play the game. So they play this very seriously. But China's clearly the top tier player. Venezuela is on the other side, is clearly essentially the Disneyland in the Americas for this rogues gallery led by China. all kinds of bad things are going on. But yeah, it is a it's an all source intelligence threat coming from Cuba. I do compliment General Laura Richardson of Southern Command. She's been very clear from even her incoming testimony of this threat. And Southern Command has gotten a big ho-hum from everybody. And I just don't have confidence that any of these matters are above the intel collection priority stack. I think we're just assuming away the problem.
No, that's I think it. We sometimes get lost in the partisan side of things, right? And we'll say like, it's all Biden's fault, or it happened under Trump. You know, like the Doogie Howser of National Security said, Jake Sullivan, or you know, it happened in the 90s. From an operational perspective, I don't care when it happened. I care that we're taking action, right? And that our counterintelligence efforts are robust, and that we're being proactive in how we're dealing with the problem, right? Not just reactive and saying, oh, look, they've got another base there. What's your take on how we're working against this problem, and how would you advise whichever administration is next, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans?
We've got to take Central and South America seriously. We haven't been taking it seriously since essentially any attempt to overthrow Castro was abandoned in roughly 1965. During the Reagan years and Bill Casey, you know, hey, we rode back into town and we let them know that this is our front yard, and we're not letting anybody play out for outside the hemisphere play in our front yard. And then we walked away again and forgot about everything. And so we've got to reassert the Monroe Doctrine. I know that sounds racist, sexist, bigoted, homophobic. This is ridiculous. This is
really, is the Monroe Doctrine all those things? Is it racist and sexist and ageist? And I had no idea.
Definitely. Stands firmly against militant and violent transgenderism. That was really the basis of the Monroe Doctrine. I mean, this is crazy. This is our front yard. And you know, and I had so many years of in the special operations community and in the senior levels of DOD doing international relations and building international partnerships. They want American engagement. This is an absolute lie that. We have to put things together again after Trump, the adults are going to be in the room. I'm still waiting for the adults in the room. Listen, these countries don't take Biden seriously, and that was before June 27th. And their number one question, I spent last fall in Panama to check out the situation with some friends. And the number one question is, where are the Americans? Nothing in the treaty, handover treaty, said the Americans needed to evaporate into thin air. And China said by about 2007, said, well, okay, you guys obviously don't care about it. We care, and we're moving in. But you got Molino, who was just sworn in, and the Chinese are trying to put Panama out of business with alternatives to the Panama Canal. Molino is a populist, and he's pro-American, whether Biden wants it or not. And so we got to depend on populists.
You said something very important, I think, at the outset of this conversation, this answer that you just gave, which is that we have to start paying attention, right, to Central and South America. But I mean, the implication there is also, and Africa and other parts, we tend to get unilaterally strongly focused on one issue, and then it's almost as if we can't multitask, right? And certainly over the decades, when it comes to South America and Central America, we haven't devoted the seriousness, the resources to deal with problems here, while the Chinese regime has looked around and said, yeah, you guys are insanely focused on Afghanistan and Iraq. We'll have a go at that, as well as, you mentioned Djibouti early on, as well as Africa, and expanding their influence, and whether it's the Belt and Road Initiative or others. I want to talk a little bit more about that, if I could, John, but if you'll stay right there, Colonel John Mills, we'll have more on this story after a quick break. Are you overwhelmed with back taxes or unfiled returns? Well, I hope not, but if you are, listen up. With 88,000 newly hired agents, 88,000 of them, the IRS has increased enforcement, issuing millions of pay-up notices in 2024. How pleasant would it be to get a pay-up notice from the IRS? Look, don't face IRS collection tactics alone. Tax Network USA can help. As the nation's premier tax relief firm, they've negotiated over $1 billion, that's billion with a B, in tax relief for clients. Services include penalty forgiveness, hardship programs, and offer and compromise solutions. Look, whether you owe $10,000 or $10 million, how could you owe $10 million? Oh my God. Their experts can assist. Behind on taxes? Well, they can guide you in catching up. Protect your financial security. Contact Tax Network USA for strategic advice on reducing or eliminating your tax debt. To schedule a complimentary consultation, call 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com. Don't let the IRS control your life. Empower yourself with Tax Network USA's support and take charge of your financial future. Visit tnusa.com today.
Does it feel like the world is getting darker every day? It's easy to get caught up in the negativity, but let's take a moment to remember what we're really fighting for: our families, our values, our future. These are the things that matter most. On my new podcast, Love What Matters, we share stories that inspire and uplift, stories of real people overcoming challenges with hope, compassion, and kindness. Subscribe to the Love What Matters podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the PDB Situation Report. I'm joined again by Colonel John Mills, U.S. Army retired. John, we were talking about China, obviously, and their influence, growing influence in Cuba, but elsewhere, Central America, South America, Africa. The NATO summit that just concluded this week in Washington, D.C., it was interesting on one level in that NATO came out with a statement regarding China. What do you make of that?
Well, Captain Obvious Stoltenberg, the General Secretary, I mean, finally, they acknowledge that China has been providing support to their colony called Russia. I mean, come on. Who else makes 152 millimeter ammunition shells? Nobody except for China, North Korea, and Iran. Who makes Iranian drones that the Russians have been using? Iran, which is a colony of China. So it was a great statement way behind. 2 years ago, they should have made this statement. It's sent the Chinese into an absolute frenzy. But it's true, but it's late. So I thought it was good on them. I'll call the ball and strike fairly. Good on them for making the statement. It was about 2 years late.
Yeah. I'd argue it was a couple of decades too late. But look, I agree with you. I'm happy when there's any focus, right? The previous administration, under the Trump administration, one of the things that, you know, again, whether you like Trump or you don't like him, right, you got to look at the policies. And it was the first time in a serious way that the U.S. was calling China out on economic espionage and their cyber shenanigans and the other things they were engaged in and for years and years, theft of intellectual property. So in concert with that NATO alliance statement about China, which I agree with you, I thought was very good. We've also had a recent statement coming out of the Five Eyes alliance led by, that statement anyway, put out by Australia in concert with some others outside of the Five Eyes organization. Also highlighting the Chinese Communist Party's engagement in cyber shenanigans. So it does appear that somehow we're getting more buy-in from traditionally reticent European partners to, you know, shine a light on China and call them out for some of the things that they've been engaged in for years.
Yeah. I always love to watch the Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokespersons in China and their theatrics and arm waving. And boy, they were really all a flutter about this. They do not like to be called out. And we would actually watch that and watch as we would name some of their cyber hackers, and they would just go apoplectic on these things. But this really pushed them over the edge. But it's true. Come on, and they need to get tough if they, you know, they want to take over the world. They need to, you know, toughen up here and not get so uptight when they get called out. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. And so good thing that was the whole UN, NATO conference, what I do take exception with Stoltenberg was this 2% of GDP spend, which up until December of 23, only 12 of 32 were hitting GDP, 2% of GDP. And then suddenly, miraculously, in the last 6 months, 22, and Germany and France just barely got across the 2% deadline that was set 20 years ago. And, you know, so Stoltenberg was wearing himself out, patting himself on the back for this 2% GDP. The new standard is 5% of GDP in this world in on fire. And France and Germany getting across the 2% line in the last 5 minutes doesn't make up for 20 years of underspend.
Let's circle back to Cuba and China's activities on Cuba. When we look at what they're doing, right? And then we also look at their purchase of land, right, near sensitive military facilities in the U.S., right? Companies, Chinese companies associated with, because, you know, eventually you can do the due diligence and figure this out with, you know, state-owned enterprises and others. The idea that somehow it's just a coincidence that these Chinese companies are purchasing land close to numerous sensitive sites in the U.S. When you look at that, when you look at what they're doing in Cuba, in reality, what can we do about it? I mean, I know we can shine a light on it. We can talk about it. But from your perspective, do we really have any leverage over the Chinese regime? Do we really have a way to change their strategic thinking and activity?
Oh, absolutely. It's all about, number one, the number one instrument of national influence is absolutely economic. And as soon as Navarro gets out of jail and back in office with Trump, they knew how to handle it. The Biden team is economically illiterate. Jake Sullivan, the only thing he's ever run is his mouth. He doesn't know, none of these Belfer Center educated folks, they are illiterate when it comes to finances, economics, trade negotiation. I just learned the other day, it shocked me, Foreign Service officers do not have to take any formal training in negotiations. And I'm going, you got to be kidding me. I had to go through formal negotiation training in the special operations community in the U.S. government. And we got FSOs who don't know how to conduct a negotiation. You know, I bought a house. I mean, no, this is crazy. So it's finances and economics. That's absolutely number one. We can bring them to their knees in seconds if we cut off the ATM. You know, your retirement fund, my retirement fund has chosen to dabble. The TSP has chosen to dabble in Chinese investments. That's cash infusion into their cash poor system. This is insanity. So cut them off financially first and foremost, but it's trade negotiations and sanctions that are updated. You got to update those sanctions almost definitely monthly, because they're going to work their way around. They've been extremely clever at working their way around. And on land purchases, what I've noticed with the Chinese, they're not stealing our intellectual property or classified information. They're actually reading our legislation, and they read and understand our legislation better than we do. And they know that land purchases, that's a gap and seam in our system. They've read CFIUS. They've read FIRMA from 2018, and they go, right. Well, there's nothing illegal about buying. So we have to depend on the states and local communities to raise a ruckus on this, because there actually is no federal law against this.
No, you've raised a really important and favorite topic of mine, which is how the Chinese regime strategically has figured this out, right? They know that, okay, look, they'll have minimal success in trying to change federal regulations, right, at the federal level in the U.S., but they can go after local and state regulations. They can, and through disinformation, through cutouts, and so you get a local community that starts to rise up against a mining operation, right, in their area. And it looks like it's just simply a grassroots effort to say, no, we don't want that mining operation here. And really what it is in part, now I'm not saying every case, but what the Chinese regime has understood is that they can influence local and state regulations and policies in such a way that it benefits them, right? I mean, in terms of whether it's mining or other issues. So, you know, we can talk about that another time, which leads me to my next statement, which is Colonel John Mills. I do hope that you'll come back, that you'll answer the phone when we call again, because we got a lot of things we could be talking about. I do hope also at that point when you come back, you're wearing a suit and tie. Because honestly, really, a T-shirt? Come on.
I'm sorry. I'm too lowbrow for the show. I'm sorry, Mike. I'll do better next time. Thank you.
Trust me, John, you're perfect for this show. And we'd love to have you come back. We got a lot of things we can be discussing, but thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Looking forward to next time.
Excellent. Take care. Well, all right. On that cheery note, what do we got? We got Chinese bases just across the water in Cuba. Hey, right? We got all sorts of things going on in the world. We got the ongoing conflict in Russia and Ukraine. Yeah, but don't worry. The world's a resilient place. We're going to get through this. That's all the time we have for this week's PDB Situation Report. To listen to the podcast of this show ad-free, in case you're so inclined, become a premium member of the President's Daily Brief by visiting pdbpremium.com. Remember, the PDB is available on all major podcast platforms. Don't forget our YouTube channel, at President's Daily Brief. I'm Mike Baker. Until next time, look, you know the drill. Stay informed, stay safe, stay cool.